The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for the 1999 film Wild Wild West. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. We'd also like to advise that the audio quality of this podcast is not quite as good as we would normally expect to give you. We had to use some alternative recording arrangements. Trust me, it will definitely be better next time. Enjoy. Christian and I got wild in the Wild Wild West and checked out the 1999 steampunk western action comedy film Wild Wild West. Could we find it redeemable? Find out after the theme.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast, this time featuring the 1999 Kevin Kline Will Smith movie Wild Wild West. I am your host Trevor Holland and I am joined by my good friend and co-host
Christian Fletcher. Thanks, Trevor, for having me on for the redeeming features again.
Well, how could I not? I mean, you're the one who chose this interesting movie.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm surprised you'd want me back. it's one of those films I have, always been aware of it and you know, I always remember when it came out, that the poster came out and the ride came out at Movie World. So it's always been in the back of my mind, always one of these movies I've wanted to see. So I thought, what better to, probably the only way I'd ever get to see it would be through using the redeeming feature. So thanks for being my guinea pig for this particular podcast.
Always a pleasure.
We will see what we think.
Good stuff. Well, if I may, I thought I'd start with a bit of a synopsis of the movie, and then we can move on to Talking Turkey and all the other fun stuff, if that's all right with you.
Yep, no worries at all.
Okay, so Wild Wild West, I think this sums it up quite well. Wild Wild West, Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider. No, you don't want nada. None of this, gun in this, brother ruin in this. Buffalo Soldier, looks it like I told ya. Any damsel that's in distress, be out of that dress when she meet Jim West. Rough neck, so go check the law and abide. Watch your step with flex and get a hole in your side. Swallow your pride, don't let your lip react. You don't want to see my hand where my hip be at. With all of this, from start of this, running the game, James West taming the West, so remember the name. Now who you gonna call? Not the GBs. Now who you gonna call? GWG. We're going straight to the Wild Wild West.
Oh, Trevor.
It seemed appropriate.
Yeah, it does. And really, like that. As much as that was a shambles of words to me in a lot of situations, that pretty much sums up the movie in a nutshell as well. So thank you for giving us a quite abbreviated version there. Oh, gosh. But I never thought we'd be touching on a Will Smith film for the redeeming features. It's, not knowing much about him at that particular time, it seemed like a really odd choice as a film for him. So, but being able to provide songs for the soundtrack, I don't know whether that was probably half the reason they wanted him on board. But this was post Men in Black, so yeah, maybe they were trying to write off that. But anyway.
he did go through a stage where, like, a Will Smith movie came out, it had to have an associated rap. I'm still actually kind of disappointed that we never got a rap for Independence Day.
Well, I think it was kind of, that was his first kind of mature role, I remember him sort of going, that was in 2000, I think. And that was sort of, the first time. So maybe we were kind of, in Wild Wild West, getting him right on the cusp before he was becoming this, in inverted commas, I'm a serious actor. So
he took the theme song rap right up to the millennium, if you remember that song, and that's when he cut it out.
Yeah, and he should have even stopped before that. But really, I just found the Wild Wild West theme song not as catchy as I was thinking it would be. I kept honestly, when I was thinking of the song, we think back to the 80s, Wild Wild West song, and wishing that was the theme song, but really underwhelming and really doesn't even fit the entire feel of the movie. But, hey, it could be the fact that it is a disjointed mess, so maybe it does make sense.
Quite possibly. So before we go too much into the movie itself, do you feel like talking a bit of turkey trivia?
Yes, no worries. Well, I've got a couple of things here, but I'm quite interested, Trevor, in the budget of the film.
Talk turkey first.
Yeah. Well, I think $170 million for the budget. Even though it does look it on screen, I felt for the time would have been quite a big budget. So and to have made $222 million in return, even though I have read to say that in movie talk, a film technically has to get $2 for every dollar to be a success, so hence the reason it's been, you know, called a flop. But I don't know, what do you have to say about the budget side of things?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, especially for the time, it was a very expensive movie. I mean, there was some quite showy stuff for a movie from 1999, but then there was also some really atrocious green screen stuff as well. just to tie in with that, I mean, a lot of the effects, especially once it got to, I suppose, the main focus of what the bad guy was using, which we'll get to, I'm sure. I mean, that really was impressive for the time. Even though a lot of the stuff around it was, let's just say, a little shaky.
But I was wondering the whole time, too, and, you know, obviously we'll touch on it, but the whole, you know, was the film trying, it was trying to be tongue-in-cheek, was it trying to be tongue-in-cheek, or was it just trying to be a comedy? It didn't know what it wanted to be, and I think a lot of these things, like the kind of dodgy, sometimes the dodgy green screen and things like that, and you do wonder, was this intentional to kind of, to be a comedy? But yeah, I don't know what feel they were really going for with it.
Yeah, I think it was meant to be a comic remake of a well-loved TV series from back in the day, which has been done a few times over, and in some cases quite successfully. I mean, I'll touch on the director a bit more later on, but I noticed that the director for this, better get his name back up, make sure we get it right, Barry Sonnenfeld, he was actually behind the two Addams Family movies, which he did before which were like really, really good movies based on an old TV property and really were brought into the modern day quite well. Not too sure if he was quite as successful with this.
I could see that he was probably writing the coattails of 60s adaptations of TV shows are probably the way to go. And yeah, unfortunately, it didn't work. But then you wonder if too that they've come up with this vehicle to go around Will Smith, or Will Smith's come in later, because it feels like very much he was. I don't know if it was something made for him or he was supposed to play in the last minute. I don't know. He seems very out of place, and it didn't really seem quite typical of him. But I do believe, I'm not sure of the, you may have it in front of you, but one of the actors from the original 60s TV show apparently is one of the characters in the new one. Now, I'm not sure, I don't know if you have any notes on him at all. Apparently one of them played the same, not the same character, but anyway, yeah, apparently there's a couple of cameos from the people from the original TV series. So that to me sounds like perhaps it had the blessing. They would have been quite disappointed, though, in the result, I think. Yeah.
Well, if we want to move on to the trivia then, because I actually do have in front of me that Robert Conrad, who was the original James West, was approached to make a cameo as the president, but he turned down the offer after reading the script, and he felt it was of poor quality and showed a lack of respect for the original series.
Well, not having seen the original series, I can, you know, I can still understand where he's coming from, because, yeah, it seems like they would have modernised it quite a lot from, say, a 60s vehicle. So that's interesting to hear that he was approached.
So, yeah, I think the theory was he was going to be in it, but, yeah, he turned it down.
Probably wise.
Yeah, and when you mention, like, Will Smith, you know, if this was a role made for him, apparently Will Smith actually turned down the lead role in The Matrix to star in this movie because he was a big fan of the original television series. He's since come out and said that was the worst decision he ever made in his career.
But then I don't know, not knowing much about The Matrix movies, would Will Smith have actually worked in that? I don't know, that could be another podcast.
Yeah, I guess Keanu Reeves really owned Neo, so it's a bit hard to imagine it with Will Smith now. But,
yeah.
You know, Will Smith has shown some decent performances within his career, so you never know.
Yeah, you never know. So, but one thing that stood out to me in terms of credits and opening credits, was the fact that there's four screenwriters that worked on this. And to me, that the whole time I was watching this, it screamed to me, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, I think.
Quite.
So I think that might have been a result of too many ideas being thrown in, and let's just see what happens.
Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the writers, I haven't seen this bit of trivia anywhere. I just noticed it in the closing credits. That theme song that we referred to earlier, that horrible theme song,
yes.
Was actually it was co-written by Stevie Wonder.
Oh, really? That's probably a credit they wanted to try and downplay a bit.
I saw that and just went, what?
Oh, God.
As it was playing in the background over the closing credits. I mean, are you serious?
Oh, my God. So, yeah, he would have downplayed that as much as possible if I were him.
Absolutely. So did you have any other trivia that you had?
No, not at this stage. I'm ready to launch into a bit of a to tear it apart, pretty much.
Fair enough. I think Christian's showing his cards a bit early. But before we get
maybe tearing it apart wasn't the right word. But anyway, I'm ready to discuss.
Fair enough. Well, obviously we do start at the low end of the scale, and not only do I have the normal review, I've also, I suppose, been getting some opinions from people out and about. So starting at the lower end of the scale, I've had several people say to me when I said that we are watching Wild Wild West for the podcast, they've just gone, oh, I'm sorry. And showed me great sympathy. But a great quote I've got here when speaking to someone who was going through it, just to give you an idea. I got about 20 minutes in and keep giving up. We'll try to watch this weekend. And then a bit later on, say about, oh, I don't know, half an hour ago, Christian told me that he was just finishing watching it.
Okay, that possibly does sum up the lower end of the scale. Oh, gosh, yes. It did take me quite a few attempts to get at least past the 20-minute mark. It was just, maybe it wasn't at the right point in time, but maybe I was just dreading this hour and 45 minutes that was ahead of me. Mm-hmm. But I managed to squeeze it in, and it is still fresh in my mind. I don't know if that is a good thing. But
fair enough. Well, you might relate to this review I found then.
Oh, great.
Okay, so more like Wild Wild West. Wild Wild West is undoubtedly one of the year's worst films. One of the factors that makes a movie so frustrating to watch is the fact it is based on one of the most inventive and original shows I've had the pleasure of seeing. Inventiveness and originality are lacking in this mess of a movie, where the script is horrible, the one-liners stale, and the performances wooden, except Keith Branagh, whom you feel sorry for trying so hard to be evil. Will Smith is stripped of the charisma that is his best-selling point. Kevin Kline, a talented actor, is reduced to playing second banana to an uninteresting hero, and I have a hard time remembering Salma Hayek in this movie at all. I didn't really expect it to be good, but I at least expected it to entertain me, instead of providing rest I didn't need. What a waste. 1 star.
Oh, I can relate to so much in that one. Oh, my gosh. It touched on pretty much a lot of the points I thought.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So I guess it's time to discuss our thoughts on this TV series remake.
Yes, which, if I hadn't Wikipedia'd it, I wouldn't have even known that it was based on a TV show, so I don't know if it was something that I should have known or should have. It actually makes me want to see the original TV show to see, gosh, what went wrong? Because as a concept, it is quite good. And really, from the opening scene right into the very Bond-esque credits, I actually thought this movie possibly is going to be really good. It felt really, I don't know, the editing, it was fast. It was, yeah, as I said, those credits were so Bond. And so, wow, I want to see where this goes. But
They were so old school and classic. That's what I really felt from that opening credit sequence.
And what I loved about, not loved about that, but the opening scene where the guy loses his head, I don't know how you can love a scene about that, but I mean, the fact that they didn't build it up with this big 5 to 10 minute, I don't know, him getting stalked or something. The next thing they established straight away, this guy lost his head with this thing. We've got this gadget here, which will obviously come into play in the plot later, straight into the opening credits. And that to me went, made me sit up and go, wow, this is interesting. And then I think it sort of went downhill from there.
Well, it went from yeah, the opening rather interesting decapitation scene through those classy credits straight into Will Smith's sexy time.
Oh, and that scene just seemed to go on for ages. Maybe I should put more time into that opening scene then, when he's in the tub with this woman. We're seeing the approach of the guys on the horse of the enemy, and it just seems to go on for so long. And maybe it's just the fact that I've watched those first 20 minutes so many times.
No, you're right. Yeah. It did go on and on and on, and they've repeated the same game. No, I'm not on duty. No, I'm not on duty. No, I'm not on duty. And you're thinking, okay, something will happen, and then he'll be on duty. Yep, there it goes.
Yeah, and then, you know, the typical gag with the naked guy coming out of the tub and covering it. Yeah, it's been done before. It was like verging on that slapstick kind of, you know, comedy there. But yeah, it really just lost whatever it was building up in those opening credits. But one thing you knew pretty much from word go was there's going to be something to do with either high-tech weapons or kind of gadgets that kind of stuck out to me straight away, especially with the decapitation, of course. But you knew that was going to, you know, permeate a lot through the film itself. Yeah. What I realized. But.
Which leads nicely into the we had the introduction of James Will Smith, and that leads nicely into the introduction of Kevin Kline with a very old school drag act scene, which again just went way too long.
Oh, and considering it was building up essentially to expose or get him alone with Bloodbath or General McGrath, and it really, yeah, it seemed to go for a full 10 or so minutes to get to this sort of, yeah, get to the point. And I actually found the movie really did start to pick up when the three of them, sorry, I'm jumping ahead a bit, when the two of them and Salma Hayek actually get away in that horse, but this is probably like half an hour into the film. So, yeah, this was still floating around in that period where it was just sort of dragging a bit. But, yeah, when you said the whole old school drag, yeah, sort of I immediately thought something like out of Calamity Jane or something like that. But Kevin Kline plays the inventor Artemis Gordon. Now, he's pretty much the man behind all of these gadgets that we see. And I found it funny that, you know, he'd have things in his cleavage, like there was a flower that would punch a guy out that comes out of his cleavage. So you were getting the idea, okay, this guy's something to do with the gadgets themselves. So that's when it was all sort of, you know, but it just took a long time to get to setting this up.
Yep, and so many of those gadgets, even in that opening thing, were just almost just slapstick. So, I mean,
just, you know, and considering we're supposed to be, you know, it all comes down to, you know, what period is it supposed to be set in? Are we supposed to believe it's, you know, he was using a lot of these things where you just had to go, right, they wouldn't have had anything like that. Or, yeah, it was just too cartoony and yeah, slapstick.
Yeah, that was really, yeah, probably, I think cartoony is a great way to put it, but not one of those classic cartoons you know and love. One of those cartoons that comes on, you just go, yeah, I watched that, and then you forget about it afterwards.
Yeah. That's and unfortunately, we've got to talk about it afterwards.
We do indeed. That's why I've got notes.
So at least, you know, you knew that with that $170 million budget, it's obviously going into a lot of these gadgets, and they just seem to, you know, not spoiling, but, you know, eventually they'll get bigger and bigger. So we've got, you know, so they've thrown in as many gadgets as they possibly can, but yeah, Kevin Kline, you know, it just seems like he's any opportunity to kind of camp it up and he would do it. So it seemed quite appropriate he opened in drag.
Yeah, probably because when he wasn't playing a character in the movie, his base character, I don't know if it was a Kevin Kline acting choice or if the director was directing these actors to act this particular way, but he was so, I don't know, it was either super hammy or just so low-key and very, well, you know, I do this and that.
And it's standing very, yeah, solid and not really doing much. Yeah.
It's like, you got Kevin Kline. This guy can act. So either he didn't want to be there, which is quite possible, or he was deliberately directed to be a lot more understated. And I think that too, that in itself was probably one of the first big hurdles I came across in this movie. I mean, Will Smith is Will Smith, but yeah, Kevin Kline I felt was such a waste.
Oh, no, and that's probably leading back to that review that you said before, or you might have said about the it's pretty much Will Smith and him having to play, was a second banana
Second
to
banana.
him, and I think it was almost like maybe Kevin Kline had been told to rein the performance in so that Will Smith became the highlight, and really, even though the disguises were very clever in a lot of cases, Kevin Kline was hidden amongst behind all these disguises the whole way through. That was his shtick. So, but yeah. So, but then leading on, like you've got, we've mentioned Salma Hayek, who was very underutilized. But Kenneth Branagh to me seems to almost out-camp Kevin Kline. That was almost the intent with that. I don't know what it was. It wasn't overly campy. I don't mean that, but it was just sort of like he was taking this caricature or this cartoony feel even further.
Well, yeah, pretty much from his very first appearance, which was in the back of a stagecoach, he just, look, I've basically said Kenneth Branagh went straight to scenery chewing, and he wasn't going to stop until every last bit of scenery was down his gut.
And he didn't mind the fact he had no arms or legs. He was going to make up for it by eating up the scenery.
Yep, I guess if you do play a character with half their body missing, I guess you've really got to kind of rely on the whole personality of that character. But whilst Kevin Kline, like we said, was very understated as his base character, Kenneth Branagh, like he didn't come down. There was like I think if there were moments where he just went absolutely crazy, which was basically everything he did, and that again is just like, well, you need those moments where you don't go the full crazy just to make those moments where it's more appropriate, more effective. But yeah, just like he had that one character and he stuck with that. Again, was that his choice or was it the director just saying, "Make it bigger, Kenneth."
Well, from what I'm hearing about how you said that, the actor of the 60s series, was really disappointed with the script, and I have read things where, the script was one of the things that let it down, and maybe Kenneth was really thinking, gosh, I've got not much to work with. I'm just going to ham this up as much as possible. So, but yeah, because even though those people like him and I suppose Kevin Kline, the whole way through, you still felt to yourself they were so underutilized. Even though they were pretty much in most scenes, you felt that their characters weren't much to really work with. So, I don't know. But yeah, it comes back, like I was mentioning earlier, about the whole being very tongue in cheek. Like they obviously hammed it up and knew they wanted to have a bit of fun with it. But it does almost kind of, it feels very self-aware, but it almost like it exists in its own world. Like I was trying to work out, I kind of need to ask, or kind of your opinion on the whole steampunk angle of because the film has been dubbed that sort of genre, but it felt like it was almost existing in its own universe because a lot of that stuff wouldn't be accessible. I don't know enough about steampunk, but to me, yeah, a lot of that stuff wouldn't have been accessible at the time in which it was set. So I was a bit confused where they were going with that kind of angle. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, steampunk at its core is what if technology stopped in the steam era? And, what would we have based on that, extrapolating it further down the track? So you've got mechanical wings. I mean, it's all very fantastical. So in that way, I mean, Kenneth Branagh's wheelchair obviously was, full of contraptions and self-propelling. Of course, we all know about the giant spider, which features prominently in everything to do with this movie, and the music video for that song, which I can't sing. That was all full of gears and smoke billowing out and big levers to pull. So, I mean, in that respect, it was quite steampunk, and a lot of Kevin Kline's enhancements to the train that they find as the most practical means of going around the country. Just luckily, the tracks go exactly where they need to go, because that would certainly be inconvenient if that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I actually thought, yeah, I've got a note here. The train was quite impressive, and it was they were cool, the scene and the little, the very first scene where you're seeing all the trapdoors and, sort of learning about it for the first time. And yeah, it was quite an interesting set piece to have in the film.
But then they just use the same gags later on anyway,
Yeah, I
so.
know, and it's also yeah, and I remember too vaguely, probably in 1999, seeing the trailer, and I remember them all the lot of those things like them under the train and them, you know, with that flying machine and all that. They used all of those things pretty much in the trailer, so I was very familiar with a lot of that stuff before I'd even seen the movie. But, yeah, they just kind of used it to death.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I'll tell you what, one thing invention-wise, and we mentioned it earlier with regards to the decapitation scene at the very start of the movie. By the way, it's not gory, okay, guys?
Yeah,
there's nothing
yeah.
gory about it. But, of course, that particular contraption, our heroes end up stuck that way, and they end up running through this wheat field with magnetic collars on, being pursued by these flying saw blades that keep chasing after them. What I found, I mean, even that itself, okay, that was kind of exciting. Again, went too long. So much of this movie just drags out what could have been a nice action scene and just drags it out too far, either trying to have too much clever dialogue or too much slapstick or too much scenery chewing. Don't know what I found worst. Oh, the innuendo is also quite terrible in this movie. But when they manage to, of course, avoid it by jumping towards each other and making these solid metal saw blades collide, they exploded. And I'm thinking, why? How?
Yeah,
out of everything, yeah. Look, I can handle the giant spider, I can handle the trapdoors, I can have them handle the rotating pool tables and the exploding pool balls. That's all fine with me. But these saw blades colliding and exploding into a ball of flame. That really got to me.
Oh, maybe they thought, how are we going to end this scene? Let's just do something way out like this. Yeah, I remember thinking that quite odd as well, because it was a scene that had dragged for quite a while, and then you're at the end going, huh? So maybe it's another chance to use some more explosives from the budget. So I don't know.
And then we lead, because they've still got the collars on, of course, and we lead to the overlong magnet joke bonding session between the two of them, and just going, just get on with it.
Oh, I know, yeah, yep. But they have to have these typical things because the film feels like it's not long enough, etc. But, you know, like an hour and 45, it could have shown off at least 15 minutes off that film and still been at a better pace. Like, you know, going back to the opening credits and that opening, the decapitation scene, nothing has managed to maintain that speed. So if that whole blade scene or the magnet scene had that kind of editing, imagine what kind of excitement they could have had, and no explosion at the end, of course.
Of course. But yeah, I mean, so like I said, I suppose it might be a bit of a theme appearing here, what we're talking about. But still, even with that, so, you know, the saw blade chase, you know, it was quite effectively done. The train was quite good with regards to its gadgets and its movements. The bad guy has his own train/tank, which, again, is quite cleverly done. But then you get to Kevin Klein and Will Smith riding through the desert to obviously fake green background. And it just after all this really, you know, it would be interesting if they just didn't pull it out and drag it out so much to this just really bad, dodgy green screen, obviously fake background. It was so startling.
Yeah, and that was one of those things that made me go, yeah, they've done this as a tongue-in-cheek. Oh, look at us, you know. But then, yeah, you then question a lot of the other things that happened and where they were taking themselves quite serious. So, yeah, it was so unsure what it wanted to be. And, yeah, that just made me question it. God, one thing that stands out to me, I've got a big question mark here, is, God, the scene, I couldn't get over the scene with Will Smith as Jim West as the belly dancer. Oh, God. It was one of those scenes where you're just like, oh, no. It was bad enough Kevin Klein doing the quite old school bizarre drag earlier, but then having Will Smith then use it as kind of a plot device, you know, was quite awkward, actually.
And too long. And that came on the back of this scene where they had Kenneth Branagh rolling around revealing his grand plan to his collection of cronies, and it was just locked on his face as he rolled around. So you had his head in center screen as everything just moved around behind him, and that really did my head in because it just kept on going. And then, yeah, and then Will Smith comes in and they go, oh, look, here's another overlong drag gag.
But, you know, like, even though, you know, yeah, that shot was quite annoying. There were a lot of times when I actually thought the cinematography, I don't know if that's the right word, or the editing, or, well, yeah, maybe go cinematography, was actually quite good. Or in terms of they were using a lot of interesting angles and shots like that. But then in the case of, you know, when we're just following him rolling around, they'd settle on something or an effect that they really liked and just use it to death for the entire scene, you know. So my biggest thing would have been possibly that Kenneth Branagh was, you know, so I don't have to pretend that I don't have legs for most of the shoot, we'll try and film, can you please film, you know, pretty much my head and shoulders pretty much for most of the movie. So I noticed that a lot, actually. That always show a real big close-up of him. That would have made, you know, things hell of a lot easier. But I thought they might try and be a bit more tricky with some of the visual effects with that. But no, they didn't.
Yeah, I think the visual effects budget was mostly taken up by the giant spider.
Oh, yes. And look, there was moments when, yeah, I could imagine, like, the, you know, that in a cinema would have looked amazing, you know, to see. It kind of even had this, I don't know if this is using the right example, but almost a Starship Troopers kind of feel about it. That kind of late 90s, I don't know, not saying the movie in general, I mean that, you know, the giant spider kind of felt like something out of that. So that was very reminiscent, and I know they both came out around the same time. So maybe it was Wild Wild West definitely had that real 90s look about it, I think.
Yeah. Actually, another bit of trivia, I don't know if it's trivia or more rumour, but apparently the giant spider ended up in there because it was originally planned for the Superman movie that was going to star Nicolas Cage that never got off the ground.
Oh, interesting. Gosh, I couldn't imagine him as Superman.
And because it already had basically been designed for that, they pretty much decided they needed to put it into another movie.
Oh, that's interesting. You wonder if they've thought, well, we've got the steampunk thing, this will work well, or, what's a steampunk? Something that we can build around this spider. So, yeah, that is interesting because it does feature quite a lot, like they were trying to get their money's worth out of it as much as possible.
Well, they did spend a lot of money, so you can imagine that they did try to get their money's worth.
Yeah, exactly. And, hey, there are moments when it does look, things look great on screen. Like, you can see the work that's gone in, but then it'll just be ruined in the next shot or ruined in the next scene or become too long. So it really just had so many things going wrong for it.
Well, I mean, probably on that note.
Yeah.
Maybe we should move on to any actual redeeming features. So I think in this movie there are some things that are redeemable. I mean, certainly there are scenes, usually involving some of the more extravagant mechanical devices, that are spectacular. I mean, the giant spider basically blowing up that town, that was just, they didn't go too long, and that was just this massive explosion, destruction orgy, basically, that really did ram the point home of exactly what Kenneth Branagh was capable of in this movie. And all the time, Kenneth Branagh was just going for it, and you've got to kind of respect that. And and it does show that the effects and the CGI were very impressive for when it was made.
Yeah, like that's one of the notes I've got here, you know, redeemably, yeah, that sounds okay, we'll go that with that. you know, it does have some really good cinematography and editing, and it actually, you know, and fitting in with like what we're saying, that cartoony sort of feel, that captured that a lot with the way they filmed it, but obviously that, you know, this doesn't sustain it, you know, the entire way through if the whole movie was made sort of, or edited. If the movie was edited, you know, the same way as possibly that opening scene and the opening credits, I think they would have had a much better movie. Now, it had so much potential, but then, yeah, they'd ruin it in the next shot by having a really bad green screen. So, yeah, that was where you couldn't really praise. You can praise the cinematography to an extent, but then go, oh, you know, it was let down by so many other things.
Yeah. So, I mean, with regards to that, I mean, yeah, overlong scenes of just inane dialogue full of either innuendo or slapstick or just terrible, terrible one-liners. Okay, no more Mr. Knife Guy.
You just shake your head.
Yeah.
Even the gags have been done before to death, you know what I mean? The parodies of the gags.
Absolutely.
But I found you know, not knowing much about Kevin Kline as an actor, you know, having seen him in a couple of things, but, you know, I think if you're a fan of Kevin Kline, I think you'd probably, the way to get through the film would be, you know, his disguise. You know, you get to see him, you know, in a lot of disguises, but I don't think you can necessarily say that his main central character really is very developed. But, you know, you get to see him trying out a few different things, and it's quirky to think what he's going to appear in next. So, but that's probably the only thing I can say in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of the time, it was just so understated. And Selma Hayek, I guess she was meant to be the main female protagonist, but she's just so underused in this movie, and essentially is just there to be the token female to be rescued from the giant spider. And as they go stomping off into the sunset on the giant spider, which they've decided to keep, obviously, the credits fade into that terrible, terrible, terrible Will Smith song, co-written by Stevie Wonder. The supporting cast, any of the supporting cast? I mean, I think it was probably some of the worst, probably the worst portrayal I've ever seen of a U.S. president, of Ulysses Grant. That was just, he was bad. The supporting cast, he had security guards. It was just, everybody who was, like, behind the scenes was either just terrible or just one note. I mean, I thought I could at least get interested in Kenneth Branagh's bevy of henchmen, well, henchwomen, I should say, who all had these various talents, but they were all just one note. So it was just like, okay, well, that's actually pretty dull at the end of the day. So overall, I've got to say that this movie was painful to get through and is just simply not redeemable.
Oh, I agree with that last sentence there, Trevor. Oh, because obviously a lot of the other things you said too, but yeah, very painful and hard to get through. Hey, I think it sums it up when it took me three times to get the first 20 minutes in. But I do think, as I said, yeah, it had moments of good cinematography and stuff, but that's not enough to make a movie. You need good character development, good plot, good script, and that's just something that wasn't going for this film. Now, I did buy this on DVD at Cash Converters a few months ago for $1, knowing that we were doing this podcast. I will try my best to sell this so I can at least make 50 cents back and hopefully get that 105 minutes back from my life. So we'll see how we go.
Plus a couple of times you tried to start it and stopped.
Yeah, so actually I've probably committed more than enough time. So I can easily see now why, as soon as the film came out, Movie World changed their ride to be called Wild West Fall to distance itself from the film. Yeah. That's pretty obvious now.
Yeah. I didn't include this in the trivia because it's more anecdotal, but one of the things that a lot of apparently cinema managers attributed to the actual sales of tickets for this movie was like underage people and teenagers buying tickets to Wild Wild West so they could sneak into movies like South Park Bigger, Longer and Uncut.
That probably contributed to pretty much most of their box office. That's hilarious.
No, absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever, which is why I didn't include in the trivia, but I thought it was worth mentioning.
Oh, that is a great anecdote. That's very interesting. But yeah, so I think we're pretty much unanimous in our thoughts on Wild Wild West, Trevor. But yeah, it'd be hard to... Is there anyone out there that would even like this film? It'd be really interesting to hear.
Well, interestingly, again, like I said, I have been chatting to people about that, and I spoke to a work colleague just earlier today about this, and she actually said she was quite a fan of the movie. And the reason she found it redeemable was essentially that, basically, Will Smith was one of the main reasons, and she feels that they knew it was a campy, trashy movie, and they ran with it, and they tried to enjoy it. I can't say I totally agree with it. I'm again with you they didn't actually seem to know exactly what they wanted from this movie or where they wanted it to go. But you know what? It does have its fans.
Yeah, well, that's interesting to hear. And I could see that fans of possibly, I suppose, steampunk would really appreciate seeing a lot of the, you know, the you know, what it would be like, you know, and seeing a lot of this sort of stuff like the mechanical spider and all these other things sort of coming to life. So, yeah, so I could see that it would have its fans out there, but just not as many as its detractors, I think.
I have got a big fan who decided to write a review.
Ooh.
With me, simply titled Wild Wild West. I chose this rating because this movie is good. What I like about this movie is that if you think Special Government Agent James West is fast with a six-shooter, wait till he lays a quip on you. Mega-hit star Will Smith plays West, reuniting with Men in Black director Barry Sonnenfeld in an effects-loaded shoot-from-the-lip spectacular. Kevin Klein plays a fellow agent and crackerjack inventor Artemis Gordon, teamed with West on a daring assignment. Stop legless Dr. Arliss Loveless and his diabolical plot for a disunited States of America. Salma Hayek is mysterious adventuress Rita Escobar, and all manner of geared-up 1860s gadgets, from belt-buckle derringers to surprise-packed billiard balls to a walking 8-story steam and steel tarantula, help make Wild Wild West a wow wow West. What I dislike about the movie is that I wanted to see more of it. I would recommend this movie to other people. 5 stars.
Oh, well, they must exist. I just can't get over the bit saying I wish there was more of it. Oh, there was way too much of it. But
this is definitely a movie that could do with having a little less of it.
I think rather than sticking, I think I'll stick with Wild Wild West over Wow Wow West, I think.
That seems appropriate, absolutely.
Oh, well, every movie's got to have its fans, so good to know they're out there, but I'll be sticking on this side of the fence, I think.
Yep, I intend to never watch this again.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, and I do apologise, Trevor, and I will issue a public apology to our listeners too, to anyone that had to actually watch this film. So, because I do feel sorry for you. So let's never mention it again.
Sounds like a very, very good plan. But hold that apology, Christian.
Okay, because yes, we've got an unveiling, haven't we?
We certainly do. And I decided for my next suggestion, what I'm actually picking is a movie that, shall we say, opinion is rather heavily divided.
Ooh, okay.
It's, if you listen to one side of the argument, it's a multi-layered dramatic fantasy with deep meaning and spectacular performances. If you listen to another side of the argument, it's a sexist, rambling pile of unintelligible garbage that's just an excuse to put pretty girls in skimpy costumes and give them big guns. Another side of the argument says it's a big, long, confusing music video with a highly depressing ending. So it could be quite an interesting one to work out if it's actually redeemable.
I'm fascinated, Trevor.
So the movie is actually quite recent. It's from 2011. And I think it's time that we watch Sucker Punch.
Oh, one film I have never actually seen and have wanted to, Trevor. So, wow, okay. I don't know if it's something I'm going to wish to have seen. So, have you seen this before?
I have seen it. And I will admit, I am a fan.
So is it a guilty pleasure, or you'll hands down go, yep, this is a multi-layered fantasy with great performances?
Well, put it this way. It's a movie that I found with multiple viewings. I can actually see more of the supportive side of. So it would be quite interesting to hear from you, from your first viewing, what you make of it. So I thought this would be a great one to really get our teeth into and really see what we come up with. Plus, I just really want to watch a movie that I know I will like.
Oh, I guess a bit like that. I'll have to speak to Ed properly for my next selection then. But no, I'm up for the challenge, and I think I actually think from the bits I've seen of it trailer-wise and things, and what I've heard about it, I think I might actually like it too. So it seems very culty and a bit offbeat, and that that's very me. So, yeah, Trevor, I accept the challenge.
There we go. Sucker punch for next time. And, of course, we would love to hear from you guys. Do you think we were too harsh on Wild Wild West? Do you think we're too generous? I don't know how you think we could be generous at all, because we hated this movie. Do you have an opinion on Sucker Punch that you would like mentioned in this very podcast? Could not be easier. Simply find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook. Head to our homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com, and you can leave comments in any of those places or in the comments of this very podcast. Alternatively, you can send us an email to therufusproject@gmail.com. And we would, as you can see, we really want those opinions, and I was so happy that I could actually bring some opinions from other people to the podcast tonight.
I think it might be a new addition to the podcast, so I might have to gauge some opinions about the future films as well, so never know.
Absolutely. So on that note, I think it's time for us to go riding off into the sunset, but we won't be going on the back of a giant mechanical tarantula.
No.
Because frankly, I think it's very safe to say that unless we rate this quite highly in our wrap-up of the worst movies of the year, hopefully we'll never have to mention this again.
Deal. Oh, well, I look forward to chatting Sucker Punch with you in the next podcast, Trevor.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Christian.
Cool. Thank you.
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Stevie Wonder helped to write that.